On this day, on the 12th of August, 2024, Matthew and Niall Cooper are camping in a field in Kent, and they've forgotten the wonderful Gary Jordan and Stephen Crabtree's book On This Day. So that's all you have.
12 years ago, we were celebrating the closing ceremony of the Olympics. This is
So,
the use of Facebook.
dear listener, welcome. Today I'm joined by Mon Frere, Niall Cooper. It's a bit giddy in the sun, and the wonderful Adam Proctor as well. We are the same old Wombles. We're back. Okay, today's schedule. We're going to have a little bit of a look back on the amazing result on Saturday, where we came from two down to beat Colchester. And then we're going to have our talking point today is we're going to look at the what's going on with the DTB, because I think there's a few issues there as well. Just sort of like a short thing. And also, we're going to try not to dwell on the fact that in the next 5 days, we're playing Bromley away twice. Good grief.
Did I ever mention I don't particularly like Bromley? Has that happened?
Yeah, I think we're all very clear on that. We can't get over what happened about literally about 12 years ago as well, I think it was. But we'll come on to that in a bit. Anyhow, bit of a reflection on the game on Saturday. I have to say, like most people, anything you've been looking around on social media, and Adam, you'll have picked this up, is that everyone after 10 minutes, they thought, okay, this is going to define our season. It
No,
was.
there's see, I obviously wasn't in the game, right? But I've watched all the clips and all the things of the different, Reese vlog, Don's vlog, whatever. And it was so bad because all you could hear was all like everyone literally moaning unbelievably after the first 10 minutes in all those clips. I was like, wow, okay. I mean, I like a moan, but I don't know if I would have been moaning as much as I could hear on those clips.
There was a great moment. There was a great moment after the second goal went in.
I'm going to do it just for all our listener. This is it. This is a reproduction of what happened on the West Stand after 9 minutes. Oi, Jackson, swear!
So that's what happened after literally after 10 minutes, all the. Everyone was going completely mental. There was a lot of breakdowns. There was this one guy did jump up and say, "Oi, Jackson, sort it out," which is the title of our podcast for today. I mean, it was appalling defending, and it genuinely looked for a period, even after that, that any ball in the box, was a problem for us. It was a real concern. I think what we're trying to understand is that we have shifted our shape. Although we've been practicing in pre-season, it feels like there is probably a lack of communication amongst that back three. So you've got Lewis and Johnson and Oggs who are now our back three. And it almost like for the first goal, for instance, it genuinely looked like someone was going, "Hold on a minute, where's the right back in this situation?" Like we were defending as if we were meant to be a four, and it was only a three. So it looked really worrying, but somehow we've got back into it. It was a lucky goal to get our first goal
Oh, it
back.
was a fantastically well-placed pass by James Bulls. Excellent. Definitely meant that. No way was that a lucky deflection whatsoever. And I have listened to some of the other podcasts who are like obviously trying to usurp us as our number one status of the best podcast out there, clearly. But he definitely meant it. Definitely. No
It
way.
was it was it was
No
it,
way of not.
basically Bugle and or Bugel. I can't. But who was there was a guy on Sky who was presenting his name very oddly, and I was like, "Have we all been getting this wrong? Because we've been calling him Amor Bugle for the last 2 years. Surely, is that his name? But now it's something completely different.
Is it Bug IL?
It was very weird."
I don't under this that got that really wound me up though, the Sky Sports thing, because that's twice now I've watched two clips of players. I think I know how to pronounce their names. Sky Sports say it completely different, and I think, oh, have I been getting it wrong? But I don't think I have. And then I think they're paid. That's their job. Their job is literally to commentate on sport. They've got to get these names right. Surely they have some pronunciation guides. It was so
Oh,
mad.
I really don't think so, and it can't. It genuinely can't be us because, whenever a goal is scored, and Bugle scored a lot of them last season. Can I just say, dear listener, Philo, our amazing man over the PA, says his name, and I'd have thought if I'm going to trust anyone, it's going to be Philo, who again was up to his usual wonderful antics yesterday. Always enjoy him reading the halftime scores out. There was a moment who just says Bradford are winning. And Bradford won in the end, which is great. I think so. Anyhow, it was, so we've got back into it. Second goal was amazing. Jake Reeves, fantastic strike,
Yeah,
brilliant.
so
I think he was.
tell us about the third goal, because I've only watched the highlights at different angles, and I still don't understand what happened with how the penalty. I don't quite get
This
it.
is very difficult. This is very difficult, and for this, I need to thank the Don's vlog. Because from the sky, if you watch it back on Sky and where we were, it really looks like it's very difficult to see it. So it's a wonderful crossing by Max Stevens, who I think, by the way, is excellent. He's definitely going to be a fan's favourite. He gives it to the crowd, and just gives 100%. I'm not going to do the 110%. Can't do it, 100%. So, but he crosses the ball over. It's headed back across by Furlong, who again I think is going to be exceptional on the left. And if you watch the Don's vlog, fantastic little vlog there, chaps. You can see that his hand is out to kind of block it. It is out to block it coming forwards. It's slightly in a slightly unnatural position, but you can't see it from the position that Sky are showing it from. I mean, it's still quite harsh because it was literally a meter away between the header and the arm going across. I don't think there's much he could do to move his body particularly.
It's a foul. It's an offence in football. Therefore, it's a penalty. That's the issue. The only debate I have is the fact that he should be in that same situation sent off because it's a handball. So it's like, obviously the referee said, well, it's not deliberate, but I've got to give it because it's an offence. Therefore, I've got to give that. So, whatever, because that's a
It's funny you should
situation.
say that, because when I watched it first time, I thought it was a foul for him elbowing our player in the face, because there's obviously something happened afterwards. Well, I'm not sure which player got injured, but he went down. I thought, oh, maybe it's a foul for having elbows up.
Well, I think it's what's happened is Furlong's gone into the hoardings. His momentum, going up, has cashed him into the hoardings. So he's gone. There was another player who's, but there was a lot of there was a there seemed to be a lot of injuries. I mean, we played 5 minutes injury time in the first half and another and 9 minutes at the end of the game, which was just like, oh my God, it just like can it please? And it's so funny when I think Niall and I are sitting there watching the games and. It's like even being 4-2 up, going into injury time, we're like, oh
Had a
my God,
chance.
they got a chance and it could.
So I did not fancy being 4-3 with 3 minutes of injury time was not where I was at. And saying that, I mean, we did have some other really good chances to put it out of sight. I mean, it was a good performance, but I'm coming away still haunted by that first 9 minutes and the fact they scored after 56 seconds is not really where I'm at. I mean, you have to look at it. That has got to be actually the worst start to a season we've ever had. To be 2-0 down after 9 minutes. I mean, you can't get a worse start. I mean, that was just a complete shock. So, Jackson, so yeah.
But obviously we did, and we turned it around, and we turned it around magnificently. I mean, we really, Nerfel is exceptional playing, that wing back position on the right. Furlong's great going on the left, and once we sort of sorted out that positional side of it, it's great. My sense is that we're going to probably need to get another centre back in, and I have a feeling that might even happen this week because we're going to need at least five people in that role. We've got Lewis Johnson, Oggs, O'Toole and hopefully this other person, but we're going to need someone else in there.
What I'm liking is the forward line. I'm liking having four forwards for the first time since 2016 that are like all offering something and all feel like they're a danger up front. That is a real bonus. You know, when you've got, I actually thought Kelly and Piggs, when they came on, combined really well, looked dangerous. Piggs has got a good touch. Kelly's got that pace. And like, I still think Kelly's one is going to score a lot of goals for us because he was so unlucky at the end of last season. He's clearly got talent. And then, you know, the two that started, obviously we've got Bugle and or Bugel or Buggy Big Buggy Gal up front with St. Evans.
Well, Stevens, I genuinely think is going to be a firm favourite. He's just absolutely fantastic. It's going to be, Piggs, listen, the other thing was towards the end, they were throwing balls in the box. And Piggs was back clearing them, heading them out. So I think sometimes you forget his defensive game as well. It was really good. So I think it's going to be interesting. And as a slight aside, moving on to the Bromley game, my sense is that we're going to be seeing Piggs and Kelly start and probably
Ward in goal
and maybe a few other changes around as well, like Haylock as opposed to Ball, because I think a lot of people were quite surprised that Ball played. And I to be honest with you, I thought he played quite well, you know, as well as getting the deflection for his goal.
No, brilliantly well played shot.
I think he actually played well. Ball has got a bit of pell about him. There's a bit of that sort of stuff.
Except, of course, he doesn't come with the automatic yellow card that starts any game.
No, but but in terms of, you know, I think as we go through the season, I like to be awarding things. And the shithousery moment came from Goodman in goal, who, when, you know, we're 4-2 up, and what he's doing is he's just kicking the ball or throwing the ball back into the fans time and time again, which got him a yellow card in the end. So he was just like, you know, he was just like, I'm trying to pick the ball up. I can't get the ball up. It's gone back to the crowd. Give me the ball back. Oh, it's gone back to the crowd. You know.
Didn't show that on any of the highlights.
Yeah, that was but he got himself a yellow card for that. That was the shithousery moment of our first game of the season.
There was some sort of bit of a ruck between Nerfville and one of their players at some point. What was going on there? Because there was he seemed to be having a proper face-to-face bit. I didn't see anything other than that clip.
I didn't notice that, I didn't pay that much attention to it, but I do. He was just skinning people. I mean, he genuinely was.
Nerfield and Alistair were really good. I mean, Alistair Smith, like, I'm going to go on the Andy Clark videos for those of you who can remember this. And if anybody can, then I want you to say on following Same Old Wombles on X or Twitter or Fred's, probably should be on Fred's now, and say, yes, I remember this. But Alistair Smith, he excites me. He's a real rough diamond. You just have to look back in your videos if you've still got them. And if you remember that, then, you know, get in touch.
I mean, in terms of, that's the famous Ray Harford talking about Andy Clark moment there. But in terms of Josh Neuville, on the other case, has got that pace, which is like a Clark thing as well. So we could dedicate this podcast to the ghost of Andy Clark. The spirit of Andy Clark.
To be fair, the spirit of Ray Harper, because he actually isn't with us anymore. So, whereas Andy Clark, I think, is still alive.
Yeah, but the spirit of Andy Clark.
On a couple of things on the highlights with Nerfville, he obviously got like shut down really quick, but he didn't fall over. That's why I appreciate that kind of play. He kind of kept, you know, he stayed on his feet, pushed through, and there was a few times that seemed to happen. So, I think that's really, you know, not playing for the foul, I really liked, and he looked really good just on the highlights. So,
no, he did. He did. I mean, overall, great team performance. But, you know, who knows? It's very early days. Obviously, it's the first match of the season.
For Martin Drake, we have obviously published and promoted the table because Martin particularly loves the table. He thinks it's really meaningful. He mentions this all the time. First game of the season when we are actually third in the table. Obviously, we were top of the league. We did sing that briefly. But obviously, that's really fundamentally important that you have that first table and that Martin appreciates that. So, Martin Drake, if you are listening, we know how important it is, that first table of the season.
So, anyhow, so that's a basic overview of the game. There's a lot more in-depth analysis in other places as well. But from our point of view, very exciting, really exciting to see what's going to be going on. It's obvious we're going, where possible, we'll go 5-3-2. If we'll need to, I think we've got the players to change it up to change it to a 4-4-2 if we have to. But exciting. Hopefully not that exciting, not that much of an exciting start to the game each week.
It's basically Jackson sorted it out.
That obviously worked. He did sort it out. Everyone should buy him a burger.
The person in the corner of the southwest stand, you know who you are. All of Wimbledon owes you a big favour because
he sorted it out.
Clearly, Jackson heard that from that person.
Now, the other thing which is going on at the moment, and I doubt this will be, I'm hoping this might not be covered as so in depth, because hey, you know, we are entwined, obviously, in the minutiae, the behind the scenes of AFC Wimbledon, not just the on the field stuff. So, as we're all turning up to the game, there are a group of supporters who've come together and have been handing out flyers which have got on them, or had on them in big letters, "Broken Trust," which I think was slightly incendiary, but it got their point across. And this has kind of come about from, there's an idea about, you know, reducing the way that the ownership of a club, because at the moment we own 75% of the club. The Don's Trust board owns 75% of the club. There is talk about that being reduced to 50+1.
And if more than 75 at the moment, though, don't we, technically?
Yes.
75 is the minimum, but the Don's Trust actually own more.
Yes. So, but there is talk about that being reduced to 50+1. The idea being that, I guess, it would bring in additional revenue. I'd be incredibly interested to know whether there's any interest out there for buying that stake. But anyhow, this group of people have come together and they're saying what the issue is that there's not been any real debate about it, and that we've been asked in an October SGM to vote on it. And obviously the way that it usually works now is that you'll get a proposal that comes through, and at the bottom of it, it will say the DTB recommend that you vote with this proposal. So if you look at, this group of people have done is they put forward five resolutions, and I think they basically cover three points as far as I can tell. And those are that you should, there shouldn't be any voting without a proper debate. So if there are bigger issues, you need to have a proper debate before people can vote on them. And I think this might also go back a little bit to the season ticket and the DTB membership. That was a problem last season because we've decided to bring the DTB membership in line with the season ticket. So you get your season ticket and you're automatically a DTB member. The trouble, I think, with that is that there are a few people who might not want to be DTB members, and you can't opt out. You're automatically part of it.
No, you can opt out. You just have to select that option, because some people have definitely opted out.
Go with Adam.
All right, then. Okay.
Yeah. No, you can, because I've seen some people saying it's not. I don't think it's obvious or easy, but you definitely. Some people have said they've opted. There's a bunch of people on some of the pro boards or whatever who said I've now opted out.
They've opted out. That is interesting to know. I think that's been a change, and I wonder if they get a reduced season ticket.
No, the season ticket isn't reduced. It's the same cost, but you have to check a box to say you want to opt out of being a Don's Trust member. But there's no reduction.
So it can be
in cost.
A season ticket, that which seems a bit bizarre to me. So there's
there's no reduction
so
in cost.
There are clearly issues around that. So there are basically, one of the issues is around proper debate on issues before making a decision. The second thing is that the second sort of resolutions cover the fact that that DTB shouldn't make a recommendation on which way to vote. And the third sort of resolution, the third sort of issue, which is covered under these five resolutions, is that the DTB want meetings to be held hybrid. They want the DTB meeting to be held hybrid so all members can join in. Now, if I actually look at those sort of like three issues, if you like, which are covered under five resolutions, it's a bit tricky, is that I kind of agree. You know, there should be a proper debate on the issues before making a decision. I don't think the DTB should lead people to make a recommendation about which to vote for. People should, you know, find out, have the discussions, read the literature, and make their own decisions. And I also agree with the fact that DTB meetings should be held hybrid, or, you know, so everyone can join in. That kind of makes sense to me. I'm not necessarily in favour of things like saying, you know, trust is broken sort of thing. I just feel
that where I'm at with it, obviously having sat on the board and being in those situations, is that I do think you need proper debate. I do know where the idea of a recommendation from a board comes from. That's really standard practice on all sorts of other union things. But I don't think it's necessarily applicable in the Wimbledon case, because I think that concerns me about people being led on certain things when there are some really fundamental things. I think when it comes to the big issues, we need to define what the big issues are that have to have a debate and can't come with a board recommendation. My big thing that I dislike is the proxy vote. The proxy vote automatically goes to the chair. And I think that puts too much power in the chair. And how the chair is selected, the chair is selected by the Don's Trust board who vote in the chair. So if you're going to go down the proxy route, then frankly, the chair becomes a directly elected position, which makes that chair almost actually like the person who controls the club, because that's where you then have, that's where it becomes a more interesting thing. And that's a totally different model, and one that probably would need a big conversation, because I don't like, because I can certainly think of other times where there has been a chair who has been elected by a Don's Trust board that I don't necessarily think was properly balanced, and they've had the power to make any decisions. So like when we were looking to potentially sell up, that the proxy vote would have been enough to sell us out. And I'm just 100% not in favour of that. So I think there are some real big fundamental conversations that need to be had. Picking up on Matt's conversation about the broken trust, I don't like that phrase at all. Because I think that what people forget is how much good work the trust does do. And there is some really good things. You know, I'm not on there anymore, but I know that there are people there that are doing really good things, and they're trying their best. And we kind of forget about the efforts and the hard work that goes in. You know, and I'm always going to be somebody who says, right, well, actually, look, we need to cut them some slack. The performances on the pitch aren't anything to do with the trust. So it's everything else that we need to be thinking about, that's what the trust have got control over. And that's where I think we need to be really careful and really think, you know, we're a special club. So, you know, look after those guys. Don't give them loads of chip.
And I think another big issue is that, you know, there aren't enough people who've been on the board. I don't think there was enough people who stood last time to everyone who stood got elected. And I think there's still now a concern. I mean, I certainly wouldn't consider standing for the DTB, because I don't want to be getting this sort of stick. And I understand on Saturday the people in the kiosk were getting some stick as well. It's just like, you know, so you need to incentivize. You need to get people who want to stand on the board. And I'm not sure that this is. I agree. Listen, I totally and utterly agree with the points. I just think that there needs to be a better way of incentivizing people for standing. I should say this is important, that the people putting this information out there were calling for an EGM in September. The Don's Trust Board have put an announcement out saying that there is going to be a meeting on Monday, the 23rd of September, which is going to be online and in person. Pop it in your diaries, folks. Where they will be discussing those resolutions that have come through, and again, I think it's very difficult with the resolutions, because when you look at them, it is written properly in this sort of like articles of memorandum speak, which sometimes is, you know, it can feel slightly inaccessible. So I think there needs to be other ways of communicating what the issues are, and I think that is also a DTB thing. We need to be looking at how we can clearly communicate issues, which sometimes can sound or be a little bit complicated. We need to look at that, how those are communicated. And we also need to look at what is the best way of communicating with our fan base, because, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, Adam, I admire you. You go on pro boards, you do the whole checking of it things. I don't, and I don't think a lot of other people do. So I think other people are looking at aren't looking at pro boards. So we need to maybe look at the ways of communicating.
Yeah, the thing with the pro boards is that it isn't working. You know, you go on there and mainly there, unfortunately, is quite a lot of people complaining the board members don't respond to the Ask the Board section, even though they had an FAQ out that said that that's what they would do. So I go in there to see whether board members are answering questions, and they're not really. I mean, I think Hannah has been doing a number of things recently, but there's certainly a lot of, it's a one-way street of people asking questions and they don't get answered, or, you know, in any capacity, even if it's like, even if a board member could go on there and say, we can't answer this question, that would be fine, but they don't even do that. So the pro boards is like dead generally, unfortunately. There's a handful of people on there and I just look at it. I don't post anything anymore. I found the flyer is obviously on Twitter, X or whatever, which basically says help rebuild our broken trust. The Dons Trust is not working for its members, the majority owners of AFC Wimbledon, and goes on to say it's harder to get hold our boards to account at a time when we may soon vote to lower our stake. Asks for an EGM to be called, and then basically sort of points out this, there's a group of people who are calling for this who are former DTB board members, former Dons Trust board chair, one of the club's four founders. I think there was a lot more than four founders in my mind, but whatever. There was four people who did us a very good piece of work, but they also needed everyone else. So full disclosure, I signed the thing to do the EGM. But I signed it because I read initially the document about the fact that we've got this conversation to come up around going down from 75 to 50 plus one. And I'm currently not in favour of diluting our shares at all. And so I want to have a proper conversation about what that means and why we would go down that route in any capacity, because I don't believe it's I don't believe there's an investor. I don't see how it's going to make that much of a difference. I think we're safer in that sense. But obviously in the resolutions...
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the resolutions don't talk about that.
No, they don't. That's what kind of threw me a bit, because I read the thing, didn't see there's these five resolutions really. Went, oh yeah, I want to have a better conversation about this because I don't feel we've had a proper conversation as fans now. But those resolutions are all about, like you said, about thinking about how voting is cast and how voting is cast based on debates and that kind of stuff. But I don't want to have a debate about everything for every single thing. I think we're having debates about these big things is really important. I'm happy to be given recommendations by the Dons Trust board because I voted them on, you know, or at least, you know, okay, it wasn't uncontested. The last election wasn't uncontested. So those people won by default. But I'm not disappointed with the people that got on the board. So I would like a steer as a member, actually, from the board, because as far as I'm concerned, they have been elected in some capacity. And then there was a bit about, you know, safeguarding the losing of the stadium, which I'm pretty sure we'd already safeguarded anyway. I don't quite understand how that fits into this whole piece either, which is kind of odd.
It's interesting. I mean, I think the way that resolutions are set is that it means that if a debate like this comes up again, that it's all part of the revised, constitution, if you like, so that any big debate would be talked about. And I agree, Adam. I don't think it should be everything, because, you know, you need to keep running the club. You can't keep having debates. But I think that there are some things. Reducing the DTB share down to 50 plus one is a big thing. Things around, you know, the colour of kit we play in, you know, our home kit is blue, if we wanted to change that to red for whatever Cardiff crazy reason, then, you know, there are certain things where you have to be debating with the firm. But I just want to bring Niall in here because I think he can explain this, because I think this always becomes confusing on the 75 and the 50 plus one, because in theory, if you look at it, you go 50 plus one, that's fine. We still own the club. We still have got the majority share. But I think Niall's very good at this, explaining what the issue is with dropping from 75%.
Right. So, I'm going to talk about some other stuff as well, but let's start with that. So the difference between the German legal system and the British legal system is really significant. And it's about what a minority shareholder can do. If you are a minority shareholder and you have more than 25% of the vote, then what you can do is veto resolutions. So you can effectively be a stubborn ass and veto as much as you want until you get a resolution you actually agree with. So, you know, you can just keep on saying no, 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 no. And as much as this controlling stake, the bigger stake, can say, no, this is really what we're going to do, they can get massively frustrated and eventually have to cave into the minority stakeholder to get out of a kind of, you know, a rut where you could get into. Now, obviously, most people are going to say, well, we're not going to sell to anybody like that. We're going to sell to nice people, right? Which is fine. You sell to nice people. You could potentially sell to somebody who is called ilovewimbledon.com, right? And they could be the greatest, nicest people ever, but you have no control about who they sell on to, which could be you end up selling on to the town in Buckinghamshire is the greatest place since slicedbread.com, right? And that's where you start getting a situation. And that the company called the town in Buckinghamshire.com basically say, we're going to do nothing until you have a proper association and that all your fans have to come from Buckinghamshire or whatever other kind of strange shit. You know, they could put that resolution down, and until it's agreed, you can't do anything about it, you know, because they'll keep on saying no to everything else.
Now, we've got to say that this is an exaggerated example, and it might not get like this. And I think that there is, obviously, we've been burned.
I'm catastrophizing, but the point is that that's where you've got to get into your head. That if you,
but it's not that exaggerated in the sense. It's not that exaggerated in the sense that that person who may well be in our interests has shares they can then sell to whoever they want to sell to.
Yeah.
Yeah, and exactly. If they sell them to someone who they don't have to worry about vetting them or doing whatever. At this point, yeah, like you've said, Niall, we could vet the next person we sell the other 25% to, and we could be like, we love them, they love us, we've vetted them, but they could sell to whoever they wanted in the future, and yeah, who they want to sell to may well change.
Okay, so where I'm at is that I am fundamentally opposed to going below 75% for that reason. Now, the other thing that I think, and it frustrates me, is that we probably need to do a big education from our fans and football supporters in general about what the Football Governance Bill is about and what it could do. So if we were going to look towards that thing of going down, we should not do that until a governance bill is firmly in place that does provide firm protections. And obviously, I've been going through this line by line and fair game and lobbying for it massively and so on, and I've got big meetings coming up over the next 2-3 weeks, which I will report back on for you dear listener to know on that. So that includes protecting the club name, the club badge, where the club plays, club home colours, all of those sort of things becoming that they cannot be changed without the approval of the recognised supporter group, and that would be for all clubs. Fair Game are asking for that also to be including the articles of association of the company, so that that can only be changed. And articles of association can only be changed if, I believe, it's either 2/3 or 75% of members agree to change it. So that would actually protect those key elements. But I'd want to see that extended a bit further in terms of some of the key decisions that go with in terms of fan consultation within new governance structures. And there will be more kind of scrutiny going on. Until that's in place, until that's cast iron guarantee, we would be very, very, very stupid, in my opinion, to go below 75%, because the risk there is to, we've been there, we've had our hands burnt, we know what it's like. and we could still sell to a lovely person, but I'm, you know, people thought Sam McMahon was a lovely person, you know, and we all, people have different opinions on that, but you have to also remember whether he was or wasn't, and I'm on the wasn't, by the way, he did then sell to the Norwegians, who then thought Buckinghamshire was a lovely place. So, you know, they, we've seen it, it does happen. And it's happened at so many other clubs.
Exactly. It's not just, it isn't just AFC Wimbledon. I mean, there's so many other clubs that it's happened to. If you do, you know, if people have to do a little bit of research, you'll find out where, you know, things have been sold, and look at what's happened with Paul Berry, for instance. And there's just a multitude of other clubs that have gone through this situation. So we need to tighten this thing up. But can I just ask this one question to you, which is that, say, if people could only hold a maximum of 10% of shares.
See, I think that's fine, but the net total of that minority shareholding has to be below 25%, because you could easily get a consortium of four or five people each holding 10% that come together that can block everything. So you need to say that the net ownership of the club that is below 75%. The other 25% need, you know, shouldn't go below 25%. It can't be more than that, because otherwise we start getting into all sorts of issues. Under current company law and under current football governance, it is simply not worth it. And we need to really remember our history. And I get really frustrated by that debate. You know, I've spoken to a number of other previous Don's Trust board members, and that's very much part of the, you know, we studied it, we looked at it. And that's, I think, where that group of people all fall. And I think that's got to be the most fundamental thing. Otherwise, we lose our. What's the point? What's the point of AFC Wimbledon? Yeah. How are we different?
And also, yeah, I mean, there's a whole situation also, which is around safeguarding the stadium, which is one of the big things which has been talked about. Which is how do we safeguard the stadium so that doesn't get sold off anywhere else, and that is always in the with the fans and always. With the DTB,
I kind of thought we'd already done that with the stadium, though. That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, I think so, but that. I think the issue is, if it goes under 75%, is that safeguarded? Can there be a resolution brought forward by a stakeholder which goes, we can, you know, sell it on or loan it out or whatever weird deals that in theory get more money into the club, but then you lose the stadium. So we have to be very careful. And I think, you know, I think as fans, because of where we are, we're rightly cautious.
I don't see any compelling, but no, totally. But I don't, that's what I mean. I don't see any compelling reason that we would reduce our ownership model in any sense at all. Because I don't see how anyone's going to put, I don't see how that's going to have a massive investor is going to do anything unless they want some return on investment. I don't see how it's going to attract new investors. And also,
this is where I go back to that whole financial argument, Adam. I mean, for me, again, the biggest potential earner for AFC Wimbledon going forward is a redistribution of football's finances and a re-looking at that. And we are in the wrong debate. We're having the wrong debate because we're going to struggle to get an investor coming in with that. Whereas actually long-term support for the club and security of that club comes about looking at how the system currently operates, which is fundamentally flawed. That is what should be being discussed on podcasts, on the Don's Trust board, on the PLC board, because that's where we really should be putting our efforts around. We're in a situation where that is on the table, it is being discussed, and all these other conversations are complete, like, they're going down the wrong route.
I mean, really I guess my general sense is that there must be conversations amongst people in the PLC and others who are going, you know, we're in a bind here. We can't get the players we want. The only way we can do that is to get more money into the club, and the only way we can do that is by selling more shares. So I'm assuming that is the argument that is going on. And I think there's going to be probably accusations amongst us being paranoid, and maybe we are, but, you know, we've been bitten here, and it's not as if we were a one-off. That's the problem. So,
no, but I think you're kind of right in that sense that clearly the call for the EGM is around this idea of trusting that the Don's Trust board will act on the members' behalf. And I'm not saying they aren't or they are not doing that. But clearly there is a concern, which I think we also have, that the PLC's influence on the board is stronger in some senses than we think it should be. And that is that, that we can be called paranoid or not, that is something that I am worried about, because the PLC board should not have a stronger influence on the Don's Trust board than the Don's Trust members. And if that's the if that's the core reason the EGM has been called, then that's probably why I continue to back having those conversations. I do think that we need to think about, like, how do we manage the democracy appropriately? How do we ensure that there's enough debate, and how do we ensure voting functions? And I think, you know, Niall's discussion about the proxy is totally valid. I guess the only other thing I want to just ask about we've had this debate a few times about the ownership model, right? And we've had a few resolutions, and it's been quite stressful for people like us who do not want the ownership model to change in any capacity that would endanger our club's ownership. But if we go through this whole thing now and we have this conversation about it, and there's a resolution passed and whatever, and we stick with 75 or we go to 50+1, how are we going to stop having that conversation? I don't want to have it again and again and again every 2-3 years, you know?
Well, I think in theory, the idea is that if you pass all these resolutions, then, you know, there has to be a debate before there's a vote.
But I don't want to have a debate every 2 years about 75 or 50+1. That's ridiculous.
I think the idea being that you know, once that's done, once we agree that it's 75% or 50+1, that's done. And then I guess there'll be other issues and other big issues where the DTB are asking for us to make votes on. Then there should be an EGM where they're discussed, even if they're really boring. And even if hardly anyone turns up, they're discussed. The literature goes out and then they're discussed, and then a vote is made. And that's the situation. So which is why I'm quite happy with the resolutions that they're coming in. I think the big thing is we need to get an understanding of why we want to drop under 75% and where that pressure is coming from. I am naturally paranoid, but my sense is that pressure has probably been put on us by the PLC, who are saying that they want more money for the club. And obviously there are fans out there who are going, we want more money, because they see has been sold to billionaires and whatever, and they're going, well, why can't we have some of that and go for it? And I think we have to just say to people, that is not our model. That is not the Wimbledon way. And there are 90 other football clubs you could support, and that which is their model primarily. I mean, there's maybe Exeter and
Exeter, the only one there.
Yeah, there's Exeter and us. So every other club in the football league has a different model, and you could support any of those sides. And let's be honest, last season we finished above most of them in our league. So, you know, in our division. I can't say league anymore because I get told off by Martin Drake. He has a weird influence on us. But listen, guys, we can go back and forward. I'm sure our listeners switched off already. But you know, this is
no, like, I think it's important.
It's very important. So if you've got this far, please read the resolutions, make up your own mind, sign it or don't sign it, engage with it at very least. And then, you know, there is this SGM coming up on the 21st, I think, of September. It's going to be hybrid, so you can sign up and join it online, or you can go along in person. I think it's really important, because, you know, this is how democracy works, and we can see this year it seems to be working. So,
but I mean, yeah, I was going to say, Matt, I think, I think the one thing that we, I mean, yeah. Who knows? We are obviously the number one AFC Wimbledon podcast. So for our gazillion of listeners, I think the thing we should come back to in another episode is to have a proper conversation about why us owning the club is really, really important in terms of us functioning as a football club, as a community club, and all those kind of things. Because I think some people would listen to this and say, Yeah. They're just upset because they're old and they saw Wimbledon get stolen and they don't want that to happen again. But if you look, every other club is selling to the Far East, they're selling to the Middle East, they're doing all this stuff and they're being wonderful and they're not getting burnt. And that was 22 years ago and we're not going to get burnt again like that. So I'd like us to revisit a proper conversation about why the ownership model is it.
Yeah. But I think it's a good. It's a fair point. But I think our thing is that we are unique. There's like I say, there's 90 other clubs out there that you could support who have that model and aren't successful.
I just want to add on this that really be keen to hear from other people who might want to put some questions because obviously they're looking studying how football governance works, how the success of what a fan run club looks like, how it operates, all that sort of stuff is stuff that I've looked into at length, and there are other experts that I know that we could bring onto the podcast that could also talk about this at length. So happy to get questions in from people, happy to get people to ask all of that and put all that debate, because certainly we can curry describe and answer a lot of those kind of things. I could go on about this for a very long time, and
anyhow, I just listen. I wanted to call it to an end. I'm big up for a debate, but I realise we've done 50 minutes on what was going to be a 30-minute podcast. So I think it's there are really important issues, and I think we should go back to it. That the reason why. It's really important for Wimbledon to be fan-owned, and read the books is an important thing, and get to understand what it is. I was huffing and puffing in my ear, but I wanted to say on another important issue that obviously again in the last week we have lost another great sportsman in Graham Thorpe, who sadly took his own life. Which is tragic. England and Surrey man, and I know that we as a club have an affiliation with Surrey, so it is awful. And just remember, however you're feeling or whatever you're going through, there are people who will listen and will help. And we have your backs, Wimbledon fans. We are the same old Wombles.